If you've been paying attention to pretty much anything this week, you definitely know about Richmond, north of Richmond. Mm-hmm. One, we talked about it last week.
Yeah.
We talked about it on last week's episode.
Just a little bit. I really didn't want to, but...
No choice. Like, all roads led to it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, naturally, we couldn't avert our eyes when the GOP primary debate hosted by Fox News starts off with Richmond, north of Richmond.
Like, 30 seconds of
30
it.
30 seconds of it. Yeah. Just playing on the speakers and on the big screen that's in the stage in front of all the candidates to lead them into their first question about Bidenomics.
Yeah.
It was a crazy moment, kind of surreal, super corny, and it's like, okay, yeah, this, I feel like this furthers the idea that he was astroturfed.
100%, because, like, if you hadn't heard that song before, now it's being played in front of, I'm guessing, tens of millions of people.
Uh-huh.
That's a fucking crazy thing to do, especially because I went back and watched parts of the debate. The candidates didn't even, like, talk about the song in their responses
at all.
It was just being boosted by Fox News. They were probably paid to put it there.
They literally put it in there to say, okay, Richmond, north of, what about inflation?
Yeah.
How about Bidenomics? How do we feel about that, everybody? Let's get our economic policy out of the way.
What a wild thing.
Which was a weird thing to kind of rush through. Like, in the, like, let's rush through the economic policy so we can get to the real meat of this, trans people.
Even when you look at polling of the Republican electorate, the number one issue is usually always the economy.
Yeah.
And right now it's inflation. And we have some figures on that for later in the episode when we talk about the debate itself. But, crazy thing to just get out of the way quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But anyway, debate itself, like you said, now I want to talk about right here. I want to talk about Oliver Anthony, the man, the myth, the legend, his response to seeing his music video played on stage in front of the GOP candidates. Because apparently he was mad about it.
Okay.
He was upset. He goes on, he drops a 10-minute YouTube video talking about saying things like, quote, I wrote this song about those people. It's aggravating seeing people on conservative news trying to identify with me like I'm one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I've seen he had a response video, but I didn't know he went at it like that.
Yeah, no, like, yeah. He came super hard, like, aggressive, like, off rip, like, I'm not one. He's like, every single person on that stage is who I wrote this song about. They're a problem. He said, it's bigger than Joe Biden, it's bigger than them, it's bigger than all of these people, and they're part of the issue.
See, folks, this is what I call backtracking. or maybe just being inconsistent. And you know what? Maybe it could be the case that he wrote the song with the intention of criticizing not just, you know, the rich men north of Richmond, as in the people who are in favor of the union.
Yeah.
Maybe he meant to criticize all politicians, regardless of being conservative or liberal or whatever it is. But it never came across that way.
Uh-huh.
The lyrics didn't suggest that that was his intent in any capacity. So now I got to believe that he's either just very inconsistent or he's backtracking real hard.
Well, it's like, I think that he just fell victim to a political dude race in the South.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think that's what it is, because in the rest of the video, he goes on to say a bunch of things. Like, he said, quote, the one thing that's bothered me is seeing people wrap politics up into this. And then later goes on to say, it's not about politics, it's about people.
What?
So I'm
come on, bro.
Yeah. So
the song, like, is political.
You can't go and say something like, oh, people can't afford food, but obese people are leeching off welfare, and say that's apolitical.
You also can't write the song, claim that the Richmond north of Richmond line is about DC, and then say it's not political. You're talking about politicians, even if we go with your explanation of the song.
Even when he says straight up, I wrote this about politicians, and then I go, like, it's not political, though. That's why I'm thinking, like, this is just a dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even, like, running defense, but I'm like, I think he's just a dude who's apolitical, doesn't pay too much attention to politics, just sees what, I guess, regular-ass people see.
Yeah.
And doesn't have a strong foundation for the things that he believes in, whatever the fuck they are, because I have no idea after watching this video. He goes on to say, he talks about, if you look at the response to the song, it's not conservatives that are responding to it. It's a bunch of different people. Which is just a lie.
Every conservative boosted it in unison.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get the angle that he's trying to take here.
You think maybe that he was just like this regular country singer, apolitical guy that, you know, he never really thought about politics being from the South, and maybe the right-wing media just snuck up and sunk their teeth into him.
I think that's exactly what it is, because like, especially because he goes on, and this is the part that's like the craziest to me about the whole 10-minute video. He goes on to address criticisms that he says are from the left by saying that his line, the people on the street with nothing to eat and the obese milking welfare, you know, the, the famous line in the song.
He has a couple lines about welfare.
Oh, yes, he does. He said that that song was about a news article he read where food insecure kids in Richmond missed meals over the summer because they rely on the lunches that schools provide while 30% of welfare money is spent on junk food. But then he goes on to say that that irresponsible spending isn't the fault of the people on welfare, and he makes us aware that he's aware that welfare is a really small percent of our overall budget and that the people on welfare aren't the problem.
Why didn't he say any of this
That's what I'm saying. After that, he's like, I get that like English is an interpretive language, but I feel like people are just taking the wrong meaning from my lyrics. And it's like, dog.
Listen, man, when you're an artist and you put something out into the world, you don't get to decide how people interpret it anymore. It's out there.
Yeah.
Like, authors know this very well. There's tons of different interpretations of what they write. Yeah, you don't get to control how people are going to interpret your message. And when you don't say any of that in the song, then of course people are going to take it that way.
It's like you can't control how people can find deeper meaning in the things that you wrote.
Yeah.
But I would argue here that there isn't even a surface level meaning that communicates that, because the obese milking welfare is very much tied to cultural conservative signifiers.
Exactly.
That's all that is. These are tried and true conservative talking points. You can't decouple those things.
Yeah.
And again, that's why I think this is just dude. Like he is just a guy.
Yeah, also, what, like 40% of Americans are obese or something like that? And that's not to say anything about their moral character, of course, but our country is one, in our FDA and all of our processes for regulating foods is terrible.
Yeah.
And we feed each other horrible things, and so of course, we're not going to have a very healthy country when it comes to that.
And it's just like...
But him calling out that, I don't know, group of welfare recipients in a song that gets blasted to millions upon millions of people at a Republican debate is crazy.
And there are so many negative connotations that are palpable that literally everyone knows about that are attached to the signifiers that he's using to get this message across, that is like, you can't tell me that that's what that meant. It feels like it's also a little bit of damage control and a little bit of this isn't apolitical guy.
Yeah.
And you all know what apolitical means, but he goes on to wrap it up by saying, quote, if we can fuel a proxy war in a foreign land but can't take care of our own, that's all the song is trying to say. It's just saying that the government takes people who are needy and dependent and makes them needy and dependent, which is not internally consistent with the things he's been saying
before.
What
is he talking about, bruh?
I don't know.
Blood was not cooking with that one.
Oh, not at all.
Jesus
Christ. Not at all.
I mean, like, it could be the case that some right-wing media, I don't know, organization got to him and just boosted him for the purpose of astroturfing. It seems like that's exactly what happened. And maybe he didn't really know what was going on, but he could have stopped it at any time.
I think so. And that's what's kind of aggravating about this whole him releasing a 10-minute video, saying that it aggravates him that they played this at the debate, because Bret Baier went on Politico and had an interview and said that we reached out to him and he said we could play it.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave him the A-OK. Maybe he gave him the A-OK in like a weird twisted, like, fuck you, like this song's about you and you don't even know, you don't even get it.
But he said he was surprised, yeah? He said
I
he was surprised that he saw the song at the Republican debate. Or even if he wasn't surprised, like, he should know by now, having been the one that released the song, that conservatives are eating it up.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He thinks it's just regular people that are eating it up. He doesn't think it's conservatives that are boosting it, which is a crazy thing to think. Like, you got to be unplugged.
Yeah, no, yeah. Average American political positions.
Exactly.
Just not understanding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, but seeing the way he tries to defend that lyric, it's like maybe if someone could get a hold of him and, I don't know, show him about literary analysis and how what you say, like, it means things.
Yeah.
Maybe he could be a good one.
Not great. He's still, I wouldn't say he's a working class hero just yet.
Maybe
we can make a true proletarian out of him one day.
Maybe.
But that's going to take years upon years of of what? Reprogramming?
Political education.
Just like the dude who goes post a money spread.
Yes.
Or my feminist literature.
Professor Pippin.
That guy.
Professor Pippin.
He's going to need a kind of revelation like that guy had.
He's going to need to make a 180 like him. That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe one day. And then the right would just drop him, like the Toy Story meme, I'm done playing with you.
Oh, they'd drop him. They'd throw some like crazy allegations at him. I don't know, but it'd be crazy. It'd be sick. Mm-hmm. It'd be cool.
Maybe one day. Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. And thank you so much to those of you that came out to watch the debate with us last Wednesday. We had a lot of fun.
So many of you came out and showed up too, which was ridiculous. We had like 800 concurrent viewers for like a solid hour there. It was nuts. Yeah, I didn't think we were going to break two.
We had like 10 times more than we've ever had for the live stream.
Exactly.
And like I knew it would be popular because, you know, the debates were going on. It's a big deal, but I didn't know how many people would show up. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. So thank you. If you came out to watch us, thank you so much.
And I also underestimated how many random people the live would have been recommended to. Mm-hmm. With hella people coming in the comments, why are you talking over them? I'm trying to hear what they're trying to say.
Yeah, apparently Sam Cedar got some of those comments too. Like, we are political commentators.
Like, bro, if you want to watch the debate, watch the debate.
It's free.
It is.
It's on national television right now.
That was good. That partly made my night.
We didn't even talk that much.
No, I'm saying.
We got plenty of
It's like when we talked over like Doug Burgum.
Yeah.
Who's coming to see what that guy has to say?
Doug Burgum or Mike Pence, who was pausing for longer than we would talk anyway. Speaking past the buzzer. We'll talk about the debate in a second. So thank you to those of you that came out and watched us on YouTube while we were live. You really helped support the channel. And if you want to support us in other ways,
oh my goodness,
you can always go over to Patreon, become a patron. It's all in the description. Patron. Also, you can get yourself some merch. We are going to announce right now. That we're planning to buy. We record on Sundays.
Make good on our promise that I think I made last week.
Yeah, by Wednesday, when this episode airs for the general public, we plan to have mugshot t-shirts available for purchase at headintheoffice.com. I think we'll do it. We're definitely going to have a Trump one, obviously, I think a Rudy Giuliani one as well.
Gas, fire, napalm. Yeah. Really?
Well, we're hoping to have both those out. So if you want one of the Head in the Office variety, maybe we're doing a little exclusive collection drop.
They're good, dude. The picture was good because we didn't get to talk about the mugshot on the last episode because it dropped on like Tuesday.
Yeah.
But God, it's so good. He looks so angry.
No, I think it dropped after the debate, like Thursday night, right? Like pretty late.
Oh,
Thursday. Or Friday,
yeah, that's
maybe.
Right. All I know is it dropped after we recorded.
I was a geek.
Facts. All of that just blends together for me. But it's a good picture. He's angry.
Uh-huh.
He looks perturbed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a really good mugshot. So we'll have those out if you want to rock it, Head in the Office style. It's all you. Yeah.
And you know, if you want to support in another way, you can check us out on social media completely for free, mind you,
100%.
And maybe leave a 5-star review on Apple.
Yeah,
just like this wonderful person
right
here.
We got like 300 of them so far.
We do.
Yeah,
you want to take this one away? I'll get the Instagram ones for the people abroad or that listen on Spotify.
Yeah, the people that just don't want to hit us up on Apple doesn't really matter for real. This is a review by Chow Call Hater 101 MFT. I don't know you know who you are. A subject, the military has gone woke. They say, writing this as the live stream is ending, but I just had to come over here to let you and everyone who reads this know that this is the best geopolitical, U.S. politics, leftist comedy podcast all in one.
Saying.
Being in the military, the daily takes I hear are insane. I can only imagine. From straight up fascism to blatant racism, xenophobia, transphobia, the whole nine yards, these brilliantly dashing men save me from insanity and provide me such a breath of fresh air. With the tremendous amounts of useful information this podcast provides, I'm able to absolutely dunk on conservative coots with the ranks. Within the ranks very easily and extremely satisfying.
Let's go.
Hearing about these things going on in the U.S. from a humane point of view is the highlight of my weekend. Hitto is now state-funded. So true.
Hitto making money with taxpayer dollars.
No longer will my days be bogged down by the shadow of our parasocial relationship, since now I hear these smooth, dreamy, captivating voices say my name. Thank you, and keep doing the Lord's work, gents.
And, you know, everybody knows that if you want the relationship to transcend the para, part of the parasocial, you can become a Patreon and we can have a very real relationship.
Exactly. It's all totally real. You know, you show up on our live stream, we'll tell you it's real.
Exactly.
We love you.
We'll tell you whatever
it's
you want to hear.
Close, intimate. Thank you for
sweaty.
Thank you for leaving the review. I didn't know there was any leftists allowed to be in the military. So
true.
That's pretty sick. You've infiltrated.
No, so maybe they were right when they were talking about the woke military.
Yeah. Maybe they are going woke.
Maybe they are going woke.
You know, that's woke military, something I can get behind.
We're about to lose wars.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
what? They go woke. What's next? They let women in?
Inshallah.
They let more women in and we can't fight anymore?
Yeah.
I don't know
what's
if I ever,
next? Affirmative action in the military?
I'm saying. I don't know if I ever talked about it on here, but I wouldn't call it call it a fight, but I got into a discussion with somebody, I don't know, about how women aren't worse than men. You can guess the position that I took. And somehow it got onto the military. And the girl that I was talking with was like, yeah, because girls aren't as strong as dudes. Like, when girls go in the military, like, I don't want to lose wars. Mm. And it's like, one, what wars are we fighting like that anymore? Two, what?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Three, also, I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court just proved this. Affirmative action policies or diversity policies in the military are pretty important.
Uh-huh.
One, for recruiting, and two, just so we can maintain our, what, logistical capabilities?
Yeah.
And even our fighting capabilities. Like, we need all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds for the military to function efficiently. People that take that position just hate women.
And it's also like, you know, I doubt that whatever differences exist between men and women when it comes to strength don't really matter when you have guns.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you have guns. And,
what's your body going to do against a bullet, bro?
Strategic positioning, drones,
yeah.
Bombs from 30,000 feet in the air. I had to get that out again. You know how it goes.
Like the underlying misogyny everyone's born with. Some people just can't get rid of it.
It's crazy. She went on to then say that girls are just like dumber than guys too. She's like, yeah, men are just more math brained. Said, no, I'm not.
Is she the one running the International Chess League from last
Probably.
Episode?
Holy shit. But speaking of women that are better than this, we have a review from Reagan Mills, and please forgive the review via DM. I don't have an Apple account, and as an official representative of Big Trans, unfortunately, all I know is gender ideology. Found the podcast on TikTok, and boy was I delighted to find two cishet white men whose podcast I actually enjoy.
Diamond in the rough.
I'm saying. It's rare to find a political podcast, on TikTok no less, that doesn't make me want to blow out my hearing permanently by lying face first on my car horn. Hito is a breath of fresh air. The boys are informative, and each episode makes me giggle and kick my feet as if we're living in a late-stage capitalist hellscape. I highly recommend it over all flavors of dissociative depression. Fugues? I'm bad at reading.
It'd be like that.
Not as smart as you guys think I am. Of in the shower, washing a pile of dishes, having floor time, all the moods. I've spent the week working my way backwards through each episode, and you both kept me great company as I go about my daily heinous trans agenda tasks. Mm. Big trans kudos to you two boys from the Big Trans Lobby. Keep up the good fight.
Nice.
We will.
Nice. Well, thank you. Thank you for leaving the review. You know the lab leak theory for COVID?
Yeah.
Well, the woke mind virus leaked from this basement.
That's right.
2 years ago in like a handful of weeks.
We're putting testosterone in all of the water that goes to girls and estrogen in all the water that goes to boys.
Exactly. We've been doing this for years now.
We've been doing the pod for what, 2 years?
Yeah.
I've just been putting it all in my sub pump, just getting it into the environment. You know what I mean?
Turning the frogs gay.
Exactly, always. And we got another review from Bailey. Okay. Hi, Jeremy and Gage. I just wanted to say, I love your podcast. And although I am a Wednesday weenie, ridiculous, I look forward to this podcast every week. I love the live stream on the Republican primary debate and stayed for the entire time. What a soldier. I wanted to say, I'm writing this on a train. We love public transportation. And I changed my major in college to political science thanks to you and my love for funny politics. You've given us too much responsibility.
I was about to say, if you fail to make enough money later in life, don't come trying to
me. Yeah, whoa.
I know about that. Christ.
Obviously, I hope that this episode and all of them in the future goes well. Listen, guys, I'm struggling today. I'm sorry. Things have been going. You know how it is. And we got one more.
Okay, one more.
We got one more. This one's from Sarah Strode. I'm a 16-year-old trans girl, and I'm waiting on my first HRT appointment. It's very refreshing and enjoyable to see two cishets actually care about trans people. Mm. The bar's in hell.
Yeah.
You are now among my top-tier comfort creators. Being trans at a young age is tough, but you guys keep me from getting too doomer. Mm. Maybe one day after college, I'll stop being a Wednesday wumbo and ascend to the height of a Sunday supremacist. You are welcome for increasing your female analytics. Hopefully, I will finish the backlog and become one of the few Hito girls.
Comfort creators.
That's crazy.
Prepare to be uncomfortable, because we're talking about all of our favorite demons in just a second.
That's right. Like eight of them all in the same place gathered at once.
That's
right. Crazy.
Ready to get into the news?
Absolutely.
As we just alluded to, we got to talk about the debates. Last Wednesday, the GOP held their first presidential primary debate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Many of you, of course, came to watch it with us live, which we really appreciated. If you missed it, though, our stream is still available on the YouTube. It's about 3 hours long or so, maybe four.
I think it's four.
It's about 4 hours
three
long.
Three and a half, four.
But the middle chunk there, the middle 2 hours is the debate.
Yes.
And that's right. It was 2 hours long. 2 hours of debate, which was, you know, I got to believe it was difficult for the candidates, but I think it was more difficult for us.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I can't lie. I was wondering how they were going to stretch out all 2 hours and, like, get to everything, because, like, the presidential debates weren't much, but I guess it was fine considering there were 8 fucking people on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And they tried to get them all to answer, like, something a couple times.
And somehow I still forgot Doug Burgum was there every time he showed up.
Sometimes, somehow, I still mixed up Doug Burgum and Asa Hutchinson, like, every chance that I got. And it doesn't matter, because they're irrelevant.
Some people were saying, did you see the thing before the debate that said Doug Burgum was hospitalized because he hurt his leg or something
like
that?
Yeah, he, like, rolled his leg playing basketball.
Some people were saying that he was, like, hyped up on opiates, like, painkillers while he was there. That's why he looked so, like, what, uncanny?
Like a
creepy
zombie.
Yeah.
Like a zombie.
And you know what? More power to him. He still showed up.
I respect it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a ton to talk about here, of course. So I'm thinking we go candidate by candidate.
Bar for bar.
Yeah. We can discuss performance, our favorite moments from each person.
Naturally.
And then we can loop around to the debate as a whole. And of course, talk about the one guy that wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we can just get into it. First, let's start with DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
This was the guy who came in with the most hype, maybe not hype, but the most, the highest expectations, I should
for
say.
For sure. Highest expectations is the word.
The most to lose, certainly, mm-hmm. because he's got a lot of catching up to do. And we've got the definitive answer here on DeSantis. He fumbled totally.
He
totally
sucked.
Fumbled. It was
he
bad.
He sucked. There was only one moment that I thought that, and I can't even say he shined.
Yeah.
There's only one moment that he had that I thought was memorable, and that's when he got on stage and they asked him a question about, he did a 6-week abortion ban in Florida.
Yeah.
They said, would you support a national abortion ban? And he said, well, you know, I know this one person, her name is Penny. She, highlighted it, one of the highlights of the debate for me. I know this one person, her name is Penny, and she survived multiple abortions until her grandmother rescued her. And then now she's an advocate for pro-life positions.
Wow.
Bro got up there and just lied through his fucking teeth.
Was that the fetus in the tray story?
That's the fetus in the tray.
Yeah, okay.
She survived multiple abortions, was thrown up, and we're calling Cap. We called Cap back then. And rest assured, it is Cap. But I do have the details. Per the New York Times, it's not all Cap. Penny is a real person and an anti-abortion activist.
Okay.
She was born in 1955, almost 20 years before Roe v. Wade, when abortion was illegal. And according to her, her mom went to a clinic in Central Florida in 1955 because of bleeding and other complications. She was 23 weeks pregnant. That's near the end of the second trimester. Penny says the doctor who examined her mom said he could not hear a heartbeat and induced labor. Mm-hmm. Penny then says the doctor told her parents, brace yourself, quote, you do not want this baby to live. If it lives, it will be a burden on you all of your life, end quote, before telling the nurse to discard the baby dead or alive.
Jesus Christ.
Penny claims that she weighed 1 pound and 11 ounces at her birth, and that the nurse, quote, placed me in a bedpan on the back porch of the clinic where her grandmother and aunt arrived, finding her, calling the police, and a nurse helped them take Penny to another hospital where she survived several bouts of pneumonia. And that's what she says her story is.
Uh-huh.
But I have to say that her mom, her dad, her grandma, her aunt, pretty much anyone that could was there when the story supposedly happened are dead now.
I was going to say, is she just the only source we got on this? Because how would she know?
They're all dead now.
Yeah.
And news didn't report on this at all whatsoever. So you can't verify it. She's the only person. So I don't know what she's hopped up on to get here and just lie so boldly about something like that. But another huge red flag is that she thinks that a baby that was born in the 1960s, 4 months preemie, would just be able to survive on a tray in the back porch of a
That's
clinic.
That's also what I was wondering about. When DeSantis originally told the story, I was like, how?
Yeah. Because DeSantis' version made it seem like almost like more implausible.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, there were multiple abortion techs. So in my mind, I'm thinking they're getting up in there like trying to cut it up and it just came out anyway.
Right.
But no, they just like, he induced birth. Well, supposedly. Induced birth, put her in a pan, and put her out back.
I also love how this story takes place in 1955, which is, again, as you said, before Roe v. Wade, before abortion was made legal or constitutionally protected, which means that this story says nothing about the legality of abortion or the morality that resides therein.
Yeah.
It just has to do with this one individual person.
And it also hinges on just like some evil doctor that's anti-baby.
Yeah.
Some evil OBGYN, mind you, that's just anti-women having children.
This right.
This baby will be a burden on you. Fucking Dr. Abortion, the evil, like...
Dr. Abortion McEvil.
Dr. Abortion McEvil. Like, I don't know what's going on. What was she smoking when she wrote this? And it's also even more wild because after 70 years of medical advancement, if a baby today is born 4 months premature, they only have about a 50-50 chance of living. Mm-hmm. And that's with serious medical intervention. They have to be ventilated. They have to do all of this. It's not good. So, like, that's all just to say that there's no fucking way.
Yeah, 70 years ago? Come on.
Absolutely no way any of that happened.
I did love that DeSantis moment. But beyond that, you didn't really see DeSantis too much.
No.
He didn't really talk about woke too much. We actually barely got any mentions of, like, the word woke itself.
I think the word woke was only said once by Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Like, in the last, like, third.
And what, like, and that's probably, like, a good thing generally for the country that's not being said that much. But DeSantis's entire identity as a candidate is the whole anti-wokeness politics, mm-hmm. right? Florida's where woke goes to die.
Yeah.
That whole thing, like, that's all he does. So when he doesn't get the chance to do that, or when he doesn't do it at all, he's really nothing.
Like, he can't really stake himself on policy positions. Mm-hmm. The only policy that he's ushered forth are policies that further the current trans genocide.
Right, right.
And that's another thing that they didn't really talk about.
Yeah.
The questions, I think there was one general question about, like, I think it was kids.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was anything that was explicitly, like, what would you do about trans people? Or there was one.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
I can't remember exactly what the question was, but you know there wasn't enough of that because Marjorie Taylor Greene was on Twitter, or X, posting about how they barely talked about it at all.
Yeah, a bunch, and they didn't. Like, yeah. I was generally surprised that didn't come up as more of a poignant topic of conversation.
I think I was trying to articulate this during the live, but I think the point I was trying to make is I think it didn't come up as much as we expected because generally I think the public doesn't view those positions as very palatable, and I think Fox News right now is desperately trying to come across as more normal insane.
For sure.
So I think people like Brett Baer and who was the other one? Martha something?
Martha McCallum, I think is her name. Yeah.
I think they're trying to be more regular and more personable.
They are the more regular Fox News anchors. It's because, like, Fox News, obviously the whole organization is batshit crazy, but they do have, like,
we gotta
respect it. Game is game is game.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember, I think it was a couple months ago or last year at this point, where they aired on, like, their daytime, like, actual, like, this is what news is happening show. They aired this segment about a family that had a trans kid. And I mean, like a preteen.
I remember that.
In a positive light. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, this is actually great for our family. Like, we have this, our trans son, mm-hmm. and we're still conservative. Like, we still love family values. It's just like now he's happy.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I remember conservatives lost their mind about that. Ben Shapiro lost his mind about it. All, like, the regular demons.
The internet people did.
Yeah, and I think Fox News recognizes that most people in the country accept trans people. Overwhelming amount of people accept gay people, gay marriage, that sort of thing. The only issue that conservatives have a slight lead on is trans people in sports. Mm-hmm. But that's such a small piece of the LGBTQ puzzle.
Oh, yeah.
That they can't hammer that home. Well, they try to hammer it home constantly. But, like, it's not a position that really encompasses the whole issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people like Brett Baer probably recognize that.
100%. Yeah. And Fox News, I think I said this on the live, I think they're trying to pivot more center, just like how CNN is trying to pivot more center.
Which is so lame for us.
I'm saying, especially after Newsmax and OAN took so many of their viewers after the election scandal.
Yeah. Anyway, back to DeSantis. He totally fumbled. His answers fell flat. And honestly, Mike Pence got more screen time than DeSantis did, which is bad. Yeah,
there were large swaths. I swear to God, there was like a 20-minute section where the camera didn't even look at him.
Yeah.
He didn't say a word.
I forgot about him. Like, he had a forgettable performance. And perhaps it is going to be viewed differently by Republican voters, as we'll talk about some polling in a little bit. But I didn't think he did that hot.
Yeah, and it's like, to me, it felt like Mike Pence had more of a personality than Ron did.
That's crazy.
Which is a crazy thing to say, I know, but like watch the debate. Like, he actually got it. And when you have less personality than Mr. Mike Pence, Mr. I can't be alone with a woman.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like,
he's a slab of wood.
What are you doing?
Yeah. No, not good. Should we move on to Vivek Ramaswamy?
We should, Vivek, yes.
100% stole the show. 100%
Absolutely.
Stole the show. He was like the breakout candidate for this debate.
Because, like, off rip, what happened? It was like Christie was saying something and he pressed him, or Christie pressed Vivek, and then he just, like, clapped back at him so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was the moment where I can't remember exactly what they were talking about, but then the audience just started cheering for Vivek's like attack on Christie. Moderators gave Christie time to respond, and he couldn't respond because the crowd was cheering so loud that you couldn't hear him.
Yeah.
And he sat there for like 30 seconds in silence.
Yeah, he was just pissed. and that was the moment that Brett Baer had to turn around and be like, hey guys, chill. To the audience. Like, oh my goodness. Yeah, Vivek, he definitely stole the show here. Of course, he is insane. And we saw bonkers. How truly insane he is. He's nonstop talked about abolishing the Department of Education. He loves that one. It's also not a new position. On stage, he said we need to raise the voting age to 25.
Which is a crazy position.
He also had some crazy quotes. He said, the Constitution is the greatest guarantor of freedom, and that's how we won the American Revolution. He's got it backwards.
Yo, who the fuck's his guarantor? Yeah, that's crazy.
I love the line that he says about diversity. He goes, diversity made us forget what we share in common. That's the point of diversity initiatives. We're different, yet we share a common humanity. That's the intended purpose.
But you know they don't care. It's all about just getting diversity again within conservative circles. It's the signifier that means this. It means black people, and they don't like that.
Yeah.
So he can just throw out diversity and say whatever, and as long as he hits the buzzword, it's fine.
Yeah. Vivek, he definitely got all of the clips that he wanted to get, and that's, of course, what these debates are for, to show you one-on-one with or fighting against multiple different candidates. He got those clips. He's going to be able to make campaign ads out of them. He did start to get on the back foot, I thought, towards the end of the debate, maybe the second half, because he was getting relentlessly dogpiled.
Yeah.
He got totally owned on foreign policy by Nikki Haley and Mike Pence at the same time.
Crazy.
And there were a couple other issues. Climate change. Yeah, he raised his hand and said climate change is just an absolute hoax, and the crowd booed him.
Which, that was a really wild thing to me, because obviously I assume climate change denialism with conservatism, and especially the conservatives that we see on stage right there, but they had a guy from Young America Foundation, which is like this crazy, from what I've seen of them, they seem like this crazy far right, like young conservative organization, come on and say climate change is the number one, like one of the number one issues on young voters' minds. How do you feel about climate change? And then Brett Baer, he asked something about like, do you support initiatives that would reduce climate change? No, do you not support it? Something like that. Yeah. And Vivek was the first one to raise his hand like, no, I don't fuck with climate change.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Well, and DeSantis tried to save all of them because they were like, raise your hands if you don't believe climate change is real or something
like
that. And
Vivek, he got his hand up there.
Vivek was, hand up immediately.
Instant.
But DeSantis was like, well, hang on now. Don't make us do this. We're not children. Because DeSantis, I don't know if DeSantis is trying to moderate himself or what it is, but he just, whatever he was trying, it wasn't working.
I don't know why he was trying to save him either.
Yeah.
Like, why he tried to step in and, like, dodge the question for everyone.
I guess he just didn't want to look bad, and he didn't want the GOP to look bad. I don't know.
I guess.
Yeah, pretty lame. Should we move on to Nikki Haley?
We should. Another surprise, like, I wouldn't call her a star just of the show, but a person that really surprised me with their performance.
Relative to expectations for Nikki Haley, especially with all the shitting on we've done to her, I didn't expect her to do as well as she did. She had a couple of good moments. As you said, did better than expected. Her answer on Ukraine was actually, like, legitimately good.
It was like a regular good take.
A regular good take against Vivek. Everything else, of course, was pretty insane. But I thought she framed the Ukraine take in a pretty good way by saying, like, a win for Russia would be a win for China, especially if, according to Vivek's logic, China and Russia are best buddies. So why would you want to let Russia win?
Which is a really good association to make, considering all the anti-China saber-rattling that's been going on for the last couple years.
Right, yeah.
It's like a novel association that I haven't seen before.
Nikki Haley's also been getting a ton of coverage for her abortion answer, which I thought was, when we listened to it, I thought it was pretty flat and contradictory.
Yeah, is it not?
I've rewatched it. I think it's still just as crazy.
Okay.
But I've been seeing people saying, like, oh, this is a great take on abortion. She's calling for consensus. So I figured we could watch it on the show.
Calling for consensus and saying that that's a great take is crazy, because I don't know, fence sitting hasn't been associated with great things in the past, but
I don't know.
Pop off, I guess.
Well, she's saying, like, let's not literally kill women. Yeah. But we can listen to it real quick, and then we can decide for ourselves.
Stop demonizing.
Let's start over.
We need to stop demonizing this issue. This is talking about the fact that unelected justices didn't need to decide something this personal, because it's personal for every woman and man. Now it's been put in the hands of the people. That's great. When it comes to a federal ban, let's be honest with the American people and say it will take 60 Senate votes. It will take a majority of the House. So in order to do that, let's find consensus. Can't we all agree that we should ban late-term abortions? Can't we all agree that we should encourage adoptions? Can't we all agree that doctors and nurses who don't believe in abortion shouldn't have to perform them? Can't we all agree that contraception should be available? And can't we all agree that we are not going to put a woman in jail or give her the death penalty if she gets an abortion? Let's treat this like a respectful issue that it is, and humanize the situation and stop demonizing the situation.
Yeah, so that's Nikki Haley's abortion response when she was asked about her abortion policy. But I still think that answer is pretty contradictory and pretty out of line with what Republicans seem to want.
That's what I'm saying, because it's like, I think it's good for whatever she was trying to do that she said it's a deeply personal choice for women and men, because she's obviously in a room full of men that don't like women.
Yeah.
So she's got to make them have personal stake in the issue. But still, this is a losing issue on your side.
Right, exactly.
Like, a losing issue. Like, you're taking the liberal side of the... You're in the conservative room.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Right. Well, and it's like, right after this answer, Mike Pence stepped up and basically said this: it's literally murder.
Bro then quoted the Bible too, didn't he?
Yeah. If it's literally murder, how can you call for consensus on this issue?
Yeah.
Like, that is the contradiction at the core of her answer to this question here. And also, she goes on at the end saying, like, can't we all agree we shouldn't have late-term abortions? Can't we all agree that everyone should have access to contraception? No, that's the thing. We can't agree on that because your side of the aisle won't let us make any progress.
They're strong-arming everything. Yeah. Everything.
And she also said at the beginning, like, justices should never have made such a personal decision for everyone in this country. What interest, why should Congress be able to make a decision then? Why should state governments be able to make this decision for you then if it's so personal?
And again, like, just back to what you said, it's like, I don't know how she is calling this a personal issue at the GOP debate when their side is the one that's saying it's murder.
Yeah.
There's nothing personal about murder. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I thought the answer sucked.
It does suck. It especially sucks in context. But, like, I guess if it was something else, it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very reasonable thing to say, look, you know, this isn't an issue that we could reliably, like, get done. Mm-hmm. Like, she's doing the anti-politician. She's not getting up and, like, lying about it, I guess.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that Mike Pence swoops in and he's like, you know, you may say that we need consensus, but that's not what leadership is. Leaders take a stance and push
for it.
Was
that when Mike Pence got up there and quoted the one verse that was like, oh, Jesus said he's known you since the womb, since before you were born, or some shit?
Probably. That's the corniest shit, bro. What are you doing? I guess it works for the crowd that he's appealing to, but I 100%, think it's corny.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, that's like, I appreciate the crazy thing is, I appreciate the attitude of that answer and wish it was applied to other things just generally across politics.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just, it's weird.
See, I don't know if she's actually believes what she was saying there. She might think that that's, like, the actual way forward, but I have a hard time believing that from someone who says they're pro-life. If it's
does
literal
she
murder,
she's pro-life.
Yeah, she said she's proudly pro-life at the I think at a different point in the debate. But if you are proudly pro-life and you believe that it's murder, how can consensus ever be justified?
If you're proudly pro-life, you're not drawing the line at late-term abortions. Mm-hmm. You're not drawing the line at third trimester. Yeah. At most, like, at earliest, you're drawing the line at the end of the first.
Because we know that the whole late-term abortions argument is just a foot in the door to further justify worse restrictions on abortion.
Exactly. Care. It doesn't happen. Less than 1% of abortions are in third trimester.
So, I don't know. I thought that answer sucked, but maybe it's working with moderates. Who fucking knows? Anything else on Nikki Haley?
I don't think so. I don't think there's anything else. Oh, she was nailing Vivek on Ukraine. I think we hit that already, though. That was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool to see.
Yeah. Vivek getting messed up on foreign policy. She said, like, you have no experience and it shows.
Facts.
It was kind of a libbed up moment, but I appreciated,
like,
it.
You know? I expect that from the former, like, UN ambassador.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, under Trump,
so it's
right?
Like, I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess.
This is all in the context, of course, that this is all futile.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter because Trump's going to win the nomination. I love it, though. You know,
the big man. The big
you got to let us be liberals for a little while. Next person we could talk about is Mike Pence. Relative to his position coming in, I thought he did maybe second or third best compared to Nikki Haley and Vivek.
You think he did better than Nikki?
I don't know. They might be about even, but compared to the screen time I thought he would get, he did pretty well, especially with the confidence to just take long dramatic pauses after the ding already went off.
Yeah.
You gotta respect it.
Bro got double dinged like four times.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
People in the live chat were saying that they thought we were the ding because it didn't mean anything to my fans.
Yeah, that was the other like thing that I personally really loved about live streaming like our debate coverage mm-hmm. was that we used the soundboard more than we've ever used it on the show combined. Every 30 seconds we had a foghorn going, we had everything going crazy, and people thought that the ding for them to stop talking was us.
Yeah,
that's crazy because it didn't so matter
funny. I thought Mike Pence did pretty well. I thought he in terms of him being him, right?
Detestable
human being. He stole all the time that DeSantis should have used. DeSantis should have gone in with the Mike Pence strategy mm-hmm. of just talking whenever humanly possible, saying, could I get another answer, could I get another chance, because they just did it, they capitulated every time. So I thought Mike Pence did better than expected.
I think Mike Pence got thrown a lot of stuff that he shouldn't necessarily have gotten thrown mm-hmm. because a couple questions were about the 2020 election.
Yeah.
So automatically they give him stuff to that, and then people have to respond to that. And because, you know, he was one of the guys that people wanted to kill during that whole saga, he got to rebut to like pretty much everything anyone was saying. And there were a bunch of questions about the economy, the Trump economy, which Fox News was pointing out Trump's massive deficit spending.
Yeah.
Which was something that was throwing me for a loop. Like, I didn't know how to feel about any of the things that they were asking, because some of it was pretty libbed up.
Yeah, it was libbed up.
Everybody's a liberal, you know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous.
They're trying to be more moderate. They're trying to get some ad revenue to come back.
Yeah, but really, I don't necessarily think Pence quoted the Bible like twice, so I guess mm-hmm. that's cool for the people he's going for.
Yeah.
But I don't think he necessarily did well. I think he just talked. He couldn't stop yapping.
Well, and for debates, I feel like a lot of the time, you do just got to take up space.
Yeah.
Even if, like, I'm sure there were some, like, decent Pence answers you could find that were punchy enough to put into a campaign ad. Mm-hmm. But other than that, just taking up time is good because you're just on the screen.
Facts, because it's like, that's like the point of debates. You want to get up there, you want to take up time, and you want to get clips.
Mm-hmm.
And you take up time so other people can't get clips.
Exactly. So they can't clip you.
Exactly.
That's what you got to do. Next, Chris Christie, another one that I thought totally fell flat.
Off, we're talking about libbed up people here.
Chris Christie's a liberal on
100%.
Stage.
100%.
Bro is a liberal on stage. He's supposed to be this like straight shooter guy who's, I don't know what, notorious for taking out B tier Republican candidates.
I guess.
And he didn't really do that at all. Like he didn't, I guess maybe since Trump wasn't on stage, he had no one to go on about. But
I guess one of the only things he hammered home was he was like, we need somebody who can beat Joe Biden. Trump didn't beat him. Mm-hmm. I beat a Democrat and turned New Jersey red for the first time in forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
But who, like, who cares? New Jersey. Right? Yeah. Who cares? Nobody cares. He did have that one line where he compared Vivek to Obama, which I thought at the time was straight up racism.
Yeah.
But apparently Vivek's line, where his like opening line where he was like, you're probably looking at me thinking, who's this skinny guy with a weird last name?
Mm-hmm.
Obama did literally say that.
He bit his whole
back
flow.
Back in 2008.
Bit his whole flow.
So it wasn't Chris Christie just being racist and calling him Obama because he's another non-white young guy. It was a comparison that Vivek was just asking for.
It was when we were doing the pre-show, filling out our bingo card with everybody in the chat, and somebody mm-hmm. brought up like, oh, Vivek gets compared to Obama. I thought that was a wild thing. I thought that was not going to happen.
They pinned it.
Blew
right?
my mind when it did. Oh, my God.
You guys, whoever said that, nailed it, because that's exactly what happened. That was actually, it was a pretty good prediction. Now, the thing with Chris Christie, I want to talk about him for a second.
Okay.
Chris Christie's entire campaign right now is based around opposition to Donald Trump, right? And he's not going to go very far.
No.
But his whole thing is to be anti-Trump. But I think what a lot of more neoliberal, average moderate conservative Republicans fail mm-hmm. to recognize is that they are also at fault for Trump coming to power, right? We've had decades and decades of neoliberal policies that have caused a lot of material harm in the United States, whether it's the rollback of welfare programs or destruction of unions or deregulation of businesses and lowering of taxes, blah, blah, blah. It all goes on and on. All of these have contributed to people feeling very, very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And this comparison might not seem apt at the moment, but stick with me. Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump both sold a message that was compatible with the insecurity that a lot of people were feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? Bernie Sanders talked about reining in corporations, investing in healthcare and education, right? He had the correct position on the issue. Donald Trump came in and he also acknowledged the alienation a lot of people were feeling, talking about draining the swamp, how Americans have been feeling left behind. Of course, he did something different and blamed it on immigrants and the bicoastal elites, as fascists typically do. But he recognized that this was real. And a lot of liberals and regular conservatives don't recognize that something is horribly wrong with the way that we're doing things. And I think that Republicans just fail to recognize that the conditions they've created allowed Donald Trump to come to power. The difference, of course, between Bernie and Trump is that the Democrats wholly rejected Bernie as a leader for the party.
Yeah.
Whereas the Republicans embraced Trump once they realized that he was going to win the primary. And they've been this way ever since. And of course, that's not even to mention the fact that all of the typical GOP rhetoric around immigrants and crime in the cities pre-Donald Trump is just an extension of what Trump, or is just a precursor of what Trump would do. Like Chris Christie, sure, he's coming out against Trump now, but it doesn't fucking matter because he and people with his ideology are the reason Trump ever came to power in the first place.
He's the reason that the Republican Party cucked themselves.
Yes.
Because nobody likes politicians. Yeah. And they're the quintessential politicians. They're the people, they're going to talk around everything. They're going to make these lies. They're going to make these promises during their campaign. Mm-hmm. They're never going to end up delivering on anything. It's going to disenfranchise people. And like you said, Trump and Bernie were able to get to the root of the issues that people were facing. Bernie in the right way, Trump in the wrong way.
Of course.
Very clear about that. And I think circling back to the cold open, it ties into why this whole Oliver Anthony Richmond north of Richmond thing blew up too. Mm-hmm. Because he's going out there and he's talking about it in a way that I feel like average apolitical people have been disenfranchised by politics who don't like politicians and their politician-y politics get out there and they talk about things and how they feel about certain issues, right or wrong.
It's just populism can break through and touch on feelings that people are really having in a more authentic way than, say, like Joe Biden talking about it feels. You know what I mean? And Donald Trump was able to do that. Of course, his solutions were all wrong, and they are pretty blatantly, disgustingly xenophobic, racist, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But at least he was talking about an issue that people actually feel.
Exactly.
Whereas, of course, Bernie Sanders had the right solutions, but the Democratic Party snuffed them out, and so Trump rose to power.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of liberal part of the fascist puzzle is something we've talked about a lot on the show. But I think that even people in the GOP that are never Trumpers or are now perplexed as to why Trump is still so popular should take some time for introspection, because it's their fault too.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's just fascism has a material base. There are reasons, as a good Marxist, we should recognize that when fascist ideologies rise up, come to power, there's material reasons for those.
Mm-hmm.
There's material reasons for it. And if there's not a real leftist voice or mainstream leftist movement, then fascists are going to have a pretty easy time co-opting whatever political party exists at the time.
Yeah.
And Chris Christie should recognize that he's kind of part of the problem.
And it's also just like, whose heart and soul does Chris Christie capture?
Nobody's.
I'm saying.
Like, especially when he's not even going to do the thing he said he was going to do.
Exactly. And he's like, not even funny. Mm-hmm. He's not even funny, you know what I'm saying? Trump, he can get to the root of some issues that people are feeling, give the wrong answers, but he's also funny.
He's funny, and he just lies.
He just lies.
He just makes shit up.
Like, crazy.
Chris Christie's out here getting booed for 30 seconds
he
straight.
He needs to get out there doing that. And it's also wild that he's staking his entire campaign on, again, being a never-Trumper, when the only person that was able to successfully do that was Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of a bunch of other reasons.
Yeah.
No one else has been able to be, I'm not Trump, and win. It happened with Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. It happened in a bunch of other places across the country.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Not great. Moving on to Tim Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Scott didn't do a whole lot. I think relative to expectations, he's probably about on par.
Tim Scott had my favorite moment of the entire debate, though.
He did. And I think that we should watch it right now. This is in response to him being asked about education policy he was asked about education policy, but in the context of like Christian religious beliefs for some reason, and he answered accordingly. So we could take a listen here.
Man, he's a good guy.
Yeah, I absolutely love Tim Scott's response. Let's let's take a listen.
Our nation was founded upon the Judeo-Christian values that has made this the greatest nation on God's green earth. I'm a big believer in Ephesians 3:20 that God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or imagine. Our responsibility should be to model the behavior we want others to follow. On education, the only way we change education in this nation is to break the backs of the teachers' unions. They are standing in the doorhouse of our kids, locking them into failing schools and locking them out of the greatest future they could have.
Oh my God. Talk about just a totally out of touch answer. Man. How we fix education is by breaking the backs of the teachers' unions.
Who is seriously out there in like their day-to-day lives thinking, yeah, man, teachers, they got it good.
Yeah. Also, no wonder unions never vote for Republicans. Yeah. Holy shit, dog.
And it's crazy because like they would never, I said this on the live stream, they would never get away with this if they were talking about like UAW.
Mm-hmm.
No Republican candidate could get out there and try to appeal to working class people by saying, we've got to break the back of the United Auto Workers. these linemen like, are making too much money making your cars.
It's like he ripped this rhetoric from like the Red Scare McCarthy era and he just twisted it to be what, to focus on a more libbed up profession, quote unquote, which is teachers, because they view teachers as these like agents of indoctrination of the youth and they need to take them out by what, kneecapping their union,
I guess.
It's a fucking
by
crazy
paying
answer.
Them less, giving yeah. them higher class sizes.
If Tim Scott was that aggressive all the time, I think I might like him more. Because that's hilarious.
He had just the perfect affect on that, yeah. too. Like, you can tell he believes in what he's saying with
oh,
that one.
Oh, 100%. And he wasn't the first person to bring up the teachers' unions and how they need to lose power.
Yeah.
I think Vivek also brought them up, but he didn't say we need to break their back. And then Tim Scott just went in for the kill. And he thought that was an answer that was broadly appealing. Man, I guess.
It's good. I want to see more of that going forward.
Yeah. So good.
I guess it's time to talk to the, participation trophies of the night.
I was just about to say, the last two losers that nobody cares about. Of course, we're talking about Doug Burgum and Asa Hutchinson. Yes. Doug Burgum, dog shit candidate, bought his way on stage. I was offended that he was just there.
Crazy eyebrows.
You know what I'm saying?
He's yeah. got some crazy, wicked eyebrows.
You should, I swear, it should be illegal for Fox News to just cut to him out of nowhere. That shit was a jump scare. Unacceptable behavior. My favorite thing Doug Burgum did was kind of like the theme for him the whole night.
Okay.
Is he kept kind of alluding to the idea that he's this working class guy, literal billionaire.
I'm saying, oh yeah, he was talking about how he like, I worked this one job in high school and I did this and I was raised by a good family and mm-hmm. now I'm just like you.
It's like, shut up, dog. You're a billionaire. I'm saying, you're not like us.
I feel like him just being on stage and thinking that he can appeal to people is a great example of the phenomenon that is billionaires are not as smart as the general public thinks they are.
Yeah.
It's just like Elon Musk and how he fucks everything up that he touches. They're not smart. They just have a lot of money.
Yep.
You don't need to be wicked smart to get a lot of money.
The meritocracy is not real.
It's a lie.
It's not real. Asa Hutchinson, same as Doug Burgum in my book. Less physically offensive to look at, true. But it's still pretty awful.
Probably worse just in the fact that I remember a little bit of things Doug Burgum did. But when Asa got on the stage, I
fell asleep. Yeah, no, I fell right asleep. Right? It was just over after that. Does any of this matter?
No.
Given that Trump is still the front runner?
Not one lick.
I don't know if the polls are going to move at all, but we could really quickly, before we talk about the man who was missing, of course, we could go through some 538 data. This was some data that wasn't available to us right after the debate closed because they got to like poll people that were watching on it. And most of these, if not all of these polls, are just Republican primary voters who watched the debate and kind of gave their grades for various candidates. And you'd actually be surprised to know that the pre-debate expectation and the post-debate grade for Ron DeSantis was pretty much on par.
Yeah,
a lot of people thought he did good.
Blows my fucking mind. Like, we're not watching the same thing. We don't have the same brain. We are not, you are not comprehending what's going on. If you thought that Ron DeSantis had he was a good orator on stage.
I mean, I first looked at this a couple of days ago, I was wondering if I was the out of touch one.
That's what I thought.
Because I'm sitting here like, I remember Ron DeSantis didn't do well.
Yeah.
I know that he didn't get very much screen time. His answers weren't that punchy. He had that one story about the fetus in the tray, but like everyone should know that's cap.
Did he even bring up like the Stop Woke Act? Did he even?
No,
like,
I don't think so.
Maybe one time he said, yeah, as governor of Florida, I did this.
I don't remember him really hammering home that much about like specific legislation he did. Of course, that's been the base of his whole campaign.
Chris Christie did better at that.
But here we have 30% of Republican share of likely Republican primary voters who said DeSantis did the best. Right behind him being Vivek Ramaswamy at about 25%. Like it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me. But if you want the order of candidates here, it's DeSantis being the best, and then Ramaswamy, Haley, Pence, Christie, Scott, Asa Hutchinson and Doug Burgum in that order.
Vivek is pretty close behind him, though.
Yes, yeah.
Which is more surprising. I feel like they kind of equalized a bit compared to where they were before this. A bit more, I guess.
Yeah, and they also, 538 or whatever polling organization they've been working with, also did a poll about people who, I think they probably did it like, your support of this candidate before the debate and then after, and they measured the change and how much support they got. Trump lost support by about 5 points, but he was already at 66. Then he went to 61, so like not going to make a difference. Surprisingly, yeah. DeSantis gained a couple percentage points up to 67.5, which is, again, weird that people thought he did so well.
Yeah.
Nikki Haley experienced the largest jump, going from 30% before the debate to 46.7% after the debate.
This is percentage of people that they polled that are considering, that have this candidate as a consideration.
Yes.
Not who they're going to vote for, but they're considering it. Yeah. And the crazy thing to me about this is this poll is saying that more people are considering Ron DeSantis than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And that's... The switch happened after the debate.
Yeah.
Which is like, what?
But who knows if that's going to stick, right? It's August. There's going to be more debates. Lots of stuff can happen. And also, Trump wasn't on stage, so I don't know that that's really anything the DeSantis campaign can write home about.
I can tell you, he'd have been a shining beacon on that stage if he'd have showed up. They'd have had him center stage. Oh, my goodness.
God, bro. Could you imagine?
Oh, my God. It'd be great. It'd be great.
Anyway, is it time to talk about the man himself? The man who
is
missing?
The man who was missing, the man who was honestly kind of mid.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of mid. Spoiler alert.
If you don't know why Trump was missing, what he was doing was, and this wasn't even at the same time, it was pre-recorded.
Yeah.
He did a pre-recorded interview with Tucker Carlson that aired at 8:55. I think it's 5 minutes before the debate actually started, 8:55 Eastern time. And this is the kind of piece of Trump media that occurred during the debate. But again, he wasn't actually there at 8:55, so why not do both? You know what I'm saying? Two pieces of media.
True.
But he didn't.
And it's also like, he just sounded like he didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So did Tucker. Tucker also sounded like he didn't want to do this interview. And there are a couple times, we'll get to it, obviously, just like, here's my little foreplay for the whole thing going on. Tucker sounded like he was trying to like get one over on him sometimes.
You think so? They hate each other.
They hate each other, and I think it's starting to show.
No, I don't know why Trump wanted to do this. I don't know why. I guess Tucker agreed to it because he doesn't get that much traction on X.
Yeah.
He's kind of, Tucker's really fallen off.
Oh, 100%.
Since he left Fox News, which... I guess it's something that we kind of expected, but yeah, they hate each other, and it was kind of apparent that neither of them wanted to talk to each other. You know what I mean?
The only narrative that I saw, like, leaving this whole situation with the primary debate, Trump's video airing at the same time, was that, oh my God, look at how many views this got on X. And it was like X hundred million views. But anybody with a brain knows that that's a lie, because views on X are the same thing as impressions.
Yeah, yeah. They count views like what it has to be on your screen for 2 seconds.
Yeah, and that's a view.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I could scroll past it, scroll back up, scroll down, scroll back up. That's 3 views.
Yeah, exactly.
On a 45-minute video, you're lying.
Yeah, it's a 45-minute video that it should not count as views. YouTube is 30 seconds counts as a view.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh my God, look, this means Trump, he's the guy. And like, obviously, yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Like, you're not wrong about that, but this isn't why.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't pull hundreds of million views on this X video. Like, come on.
Yeah. I guess we can go through some of our favorite moments from this interview, but if you watch the trailer that we had quote tweeted about being crazy, those were all the best moments.
Mm-hmm.
When he was asking, like, do you think Epstein killed himself?
Wild, by the way.
When he said, do you think that people are going to try to target you for assassination? Like, those were the best moments.
Uh-huh.
Everything else was either Trump just kind of droning on about, I don't know, nonsense.
Yeah.
Or just, like, questions that people don't really want to hear. But, yeah, I don't know.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. Of course, first, as I just said, Tucker asked if Epstein killed himself. Trump said he doesn't know.
Which was crazy. And then he doubled down. He said, actually, you know, he probably didn't kill himself. Like, he had a lot going on. Like,
yeah,
I don't think he did. You know, a lot of security, like, things were crazy. Like, it could have been better. But God,
I hate that Epstein has become this sort of, like, not a litmus test, but he's just a political tool that both the left and the right use whenever they want to without recognizing that people, both liberals and conservatives, have been pictured with Epstein. Exactly.
And complicit in all of his fucking shenanigans, like his legal shenanigans, not even just the shenanigans, but.
Yeah, like conservatives use it whenever they want to be like, Hillary Clinton's a pedophile.
Uh-huh.
Liberals use it when they want to be like, Donald Trump is a pedophile. None of them ever recognize that their own people are pictured with Jeffrey Epstein. It's so annoying.
And honestly, this is where I started I think the cracks started to show with Tucker and Trump's relationship, because there was one point where
this
he's like
the first question.
I know. He's like, well, your attorney general was the guy that handled this. Mm-hmm. Your attorney general was the guy that did this. So can we trust him?
Yeah.
Can we trust any of that? Trump's like, well, you know, I don't think he really killed himself. Like, he probably didn't kill himself. So
yeah. No, it was a sad. I wanted to see Trump come out and be like, oh yeah, he definitely didn't. It was definitely the Clintons.
Yeah.
But maybe that would open him up to more litigation.
You think so? There was another point where he's like, yeah, I don't like to attack Hillary anymore. I like to only attack one person. So I changed that to Joe Biden.
Oh yeah. Did he say crooked Joe Biden, not crooked Hillary anymore?
Something
he's like crooked
that,
Hillary
yeah.
was a great name. And he's real for that. And then Tucker asked, are you worried they're going to try to kill you? Which is a crazy question.
I'm saying.
Trump didn't directly answer. He did say there's tons of great Democrats, which, you know, moderate king.
Exactly.
Of course.
I can't imagine getting somebody on, if we blow up one day, I can't imagine getting someone on who's not, like, I don't know, actively fleeing the country because they did something and asking them, like, oh, you think they're going to kill you? Right after I asked, do you think Epstein killed himself?
God, I would love to interview Donald Trump. Are you kidding? If we could have him right here in this studio asking him questions.
Sitting crisscross applesauce like right there.
I'd promise to do softball questions if we could just say some crazy stuff.
I'm saying, bro.
If he was like, you know, no debate. This isn't a debate. You can't push that hard.
Exactly.
We could just ask some crazy questions. I would do it.
I would impress him. I think I'd lead him in like general directions to get even crazier answers too.
I would think it through.
Exactly.
I'd plan ahead of time. Trump, of course, still going on about how the election was rigged. And then he got into this little rant where it was like 2 minutes long where he's like, Biden looks terrible on the beach. Just body shaming, I guess. I'm sure Trump doesn't look good on the beach. You know what I'm saying?
No, definitely not. And this is Trump though. This is Trump in his bag, and I needed more of this to come through, and it didn't. Sadly.
Yeah. We didn't get enough of that, but Well, I mean, Trump is what 6'3", 215. So like, he probably looks great on the beach.
I saw that tweet earlier.
If that's not a self-reported number.
They they didn't make him take any of his coats off, nothing. No.
The 6'3 or 6'2 or whatever, I believe. Like, he's a tall guy.
6'3,
but come on now. Come on 215? Now. We know. We
come
know.
Come on. You're telling me he's built like that?
Yeah, we know. I think everyone knows that one. He then said that the foreign, was this Tucker? He said the foreign indictments aren't working. They have to kill you now. Like, he kept going on the kill you thing.
He couldn't let go.
Yeah.
He is farming so hard for, well, you think they're going to kill you. He wanted that sound bite so bad.
Yeah, he really did.
Trump would not give it to him.
Same thing with the Civil War question that he asked over and over towards the end. He's like, do you think it's going to be a civil war?
But goddamn, even that is like regular, like, internet Republican rhetoric, just straight up, just two times in 20 minutes. You think they're going to kill you? Yeah, but like, are they going to fucking murder you though?
So good, man. He's farming for it.
That's why I think that he's trying to just let everyone know that they hate each other.
Yeah. One of my favorite questions that Tucker asked from a leftist perspective, not Tucker being the leftist, of course, but me being a leftist hearing the question was, why is China allowed to conduct imperialism in our hemisphere?
That one's for the MAGA communists.
I love
that.
The
one is for Jimmy Dore.
Why do they get to do imperialism? This is our hemisphere.
we own this entire hemisphere.
The phrasing is just so perfect.
The implications. Oh my gosh.
Oh man. Perfect question. Then Trump went on a several minute rant about electric vehicles and wanting to limit gas stoves, of course. Mostly blaming it on China.
He said they're destroying our country with all these electric vehicles and windmills, which are mostly made in China. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the windmills being mostly made in China. Like, dog, you're the made in America guy. Why don't you talk about how you're going to make windmills in America? Some shit like that.
Well,
like,
that's woke.
True.
Yeah, no, you can't do
true,
that.
We can't do any green energy.
Only coal.
The windmills are destroying our country. It just happens to be a aggravating circumstance that they're made in China.
Yeah. he of course went on and on about Democratic policy, saying that they have to cheat because, you know, Trump is almost always pivoting back to they stole the election from me in 2020. Yeah. Like, he's been doing this for years now. He said something about how Democratic policies are so unpopular that they have to cheat to win, which is funny because that's what Republicans do.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what Republicans tried to do. We know this because if you poll any of the main line Democratic positions, paid leave, abortion care, climate change, et cetera, the Democratic positions are always more popular.
Exactly.
And that's a phenomenon that we've talked about before. And then he hit us with the mail-in ballots and all of, like, the voter ID stuff.
Oh, he hit us with the classic, oh, mail-in ballots are wrong, despite him voting with a mail-in ballot in 2020.
Yes.
Despite him and huge swaths of his supporters voting with mail-in ballots, despite our veterans voting with mail-in ballots, our boys overseas fighting for our country vote with mail-in ballots, that's always cheating. That's always wrong.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I loved the voter ID question because it got me my Trump moment that I was looking for more of the time, where he said, oh, well, voter IDs, I don't understand. At the DNC, you need an ID to do all these things. And it's like, one, that's a private event.
Yeah, yeah.
That DNC stuff is all private. That's not public. They can run it however they want to. And then he went on to say, you need an ID to do anything. You need an ID to go to the grocery store. Get your groceries. On your credit card, they have an ID on you. Like, bro, what are you cooking?
What are you talking about, bro?
You're not cooking anything because you've never been to the grocery store before, I guess, but fuck.
Man, we get these moments of lucidity out of Trump that, you know, you get a feeling that he wants to return to how he was.
Yeah.
But I can't help but feel coming to the end of this interview that he is just so much on the back foot right now. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't go on the offensive because of these indictments, because of, I don't know, all the other people running in the election, that he just can't do what he normally does. Yeah. And that's not to say Trump is a victim here. Like, he's got everything that's coming to him. But it's sad from a content creator perspective,
yeah,
because we don't get the funny sound bites anymore.
Well, it's like, I also wonder if he's just on, like, a crazy gag order by his lawyers.
Oh, well, that too.
Like, because I think I brought it up last time. I think part of the reason why he couldn't show up to the debate is maybe because his lawyers were like, no.
Yeah.
And they can control the Tucker Carlson interview. They can go up and say, hey, you cannot ask about this. You cannot lead the questions to here. Trump, you cannot say this whatsoever.
You think the lawyers were like, if he goes on that stage, we're fucked. Like,
I would imagine, because they can't control him on there. Yeah. At least with a pre-recorded interview, they can go in, they can cut things out, they can do all that. So maybe the conspiratorial side of me is thinking, maybe that's what's ultimately happening.
Yeah, that's the best theory I've heard so far, I think.
Because I think he was already put on gag order for, like, something.
Well, because he tweeted about it. As soon as the judge said, don't go and talk about this, he tweeted about it. And then he got hit with not another indictment, but another charge or another piece of evidence in the existing indictment from the DOJ, which is like the Alex Jones method of surviving court.
So you know good, what I mean? Dude.
Not
so
that he did very well.
Good. Do you see he tweeted, like, he came back to X?
Trump?
Yeah, he posted the mugshot on his account. Yeah. I wonder if he's going to be back or if he just wants the impressions.
I don't know, but he did get a lot of attention. When I saw that post, I didn't think it was actually him because I was like, he hasn't posted.
I didn't either. I thought it was a fake account.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good to see him back. Welcome back, Mr. President.
Mr. President, please keep tweeting. Please, bro, don't listen to your attorneys.
God, that shit would be sick if he came back to Twitter.
Can you imagine if he came back to Twitter and just tweeted something so crazy that he got just thrown away for life?
Fifth indictment
for his tweets, bro. Oh my God, he's like, I'm not listening to my attorneys. Well, they're trying to hold me back.
Did you hear that Jack Smith got his DMs, the legal counsel, the special counsel from the DOJ got Trump's DMs? Yeah. Which, maybe there's something crazy in there. That'd be cool.
I would love to see it. I tweeted about it. I would love to see what bro had cooking up in there.
Oh, that'd be so
There's
good.
There's gotta be money. Some nuts shit in his drafts. Oh,
3 months
my
worth of the Patreon.
God, dude.
I'll pay that just to get
I'm throwing a year out there. I would. I'm raising my bid, bro. Come on.
Oh, man. So I think the final question of this interview was, do you think we're going towards civil war? Trump didn't really answer the question. He just said, like, oh, it's not good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Tucker's doing, like, the Tim Pool thing where he's like, come on, start a civil war, do it.
I don't
it.
Think he can be inflammatory anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think, man, he can say anything that's too crazy, and it's a tragedy. Yeah. You know, honestly, maybe I want him to beat the cases.
Yeah. So keep talking?
Yeah.
Well, it's just, like, watching this, like, 2 days after we watched the debate, it really just shows that the debates are really the spectacle. You know what I mean? Like, that's the content that people want to watch.
That's what I'm here for.
I didn't see anybody covering the Trump interview. I'm sure, like, some people did. I'm sure some of, like, you know, CNN, maybe they had something to say about it. But for the most part, everyone's talking about the debates, and rightfully so. Those are entertaining.
And it's, like, ultimately, there's nothing to say about the Trump interview. Even when he was kind of cooking, it was nothing new.
Well, yeah, dare I say, a bog standard interview.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It didn't even feel like an interview. It just kind of felt like two dudes talking, which maybe is the vibe they were going for, but, like, it wasn't good.
In this political environment, that shit sucks.
All I'm saying is, if you're going on there and you're going on your interview and you're saying, yeah, I don't really think that Epstein killed himself, and you're not passionate about it, you're not saying anything, and you got Tim Scott talking about breaking the backs of teachers' unions, you got Ron DeSantis lying about people surviving abortion attempts, you got Nikki Haley being, like, a kind of right,
kind of lived up
about an issue. Yeah.
You got Chris Christie being booed for 30 seconds straight.
I'm saying,
like, come on, you can't beat that with just a basic interview with someone who already agrees with you.
Yeah.
Who's just doing it for the views because they lost their last job. It's not going to work.
And they lost their last job partly because emails linked about how much he fucking hates you.
And, like, let's be real. Trump is at his best when he's going on the offensive. Mm-hmm. And that's what he can do in a debate environment. You can't do that with Tucker Carlson.
Exactly.
In a pre-recorded interview. I got to know what was cut, though.
Trump needs to be able to give it back to him.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. I'd love to see what,
like,
it was
the Kanye
cut.
Interview, how they cut a bunch of shit of him just being a Nazi.
Yeah.
To make him look slightly better.
Oh, my God.
I wonder what
God.
They cut for Trump. But given the rest of this, maybe it wasn't that much they cut. Who knows?
I don't know. And I know, shit, dude. Did you see, DeSantis got I wouldn't say a massive boost, but he raised $1 million the first 24 hours after the debate.
I feel like that's pretty normal for
candidates
to do.
Pretty normal, but Vivek raised about $500,000, and numbers didn't even come out for everybody else.
So probably nothing notable for them then.
So nothing notable for them, but that is weird, because I feel like that's like a solid indicator that the people who are funding these things, like the donors, like think that he performed.
I guess so. I mean, maybe for DeSantis, a victory was just not fucking up. You know what I mean?
Maybe that's why he didn't talk.
Maybe there were some funny moments of like the Homelander comparisons. He's gritting his teeth while smiling. Like, DeSantis is very clearly a lizard person. But
he gets out there and he just fucking stares.
Yeah, maybe we're looking at this the wrong way. We're expecting DeSantis to come in being the guy who wasn't second, isn't second, whatever. We expected him to kind of come out and do a big showing where he gets a lot of attention. Maybe what would be good for him is just surviving and getting through.
Maybe
that's just what he did.
Maybe we're expecting Trump out of him.
Yeah.
And maybe it's thinking about how Trump made himself stand out amongst the rest of the GOP, and that's what we're expecting, instead of considering what was the standard before Trump.
Yeah.
And how the people who are funding these things kind of want to get away from that. And I mean, while we're talking about fundraising, we can't ignore the fact that when the mugshot picture, like, finally came out, Trump raised $7 million off
that's
that.
That's crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, game is game, baby. Come
I hope
on.
That we can raise something like that off our drop.
Yeah, hopefully we don't miss the news cycle.
Exactly.
That'd be classic kiddo fashion, though.
What can I say, bro?
I don't know, man. But yeah, maybe DeSantis was just trying to get by. But either way, at some base level, it's not enough to win.
No, you have to be likable. You're not going to get 70 something million votes or whatever you need just by skating by.
Yeah, in this environment where personalities are highlighted, you got to do something other than just survive, even if just surviving is better than what DeSantis has been doing for the past 4 or 5 months. You got to do something to make things shake, because you're not doing well right now.
I wonder what the notes are, like what the notes are that his team is giving him, what they're going over and talking about, and how, if anything at all is going to change, will change when we get to the next debate.
Yeah, maybe. Just talk as little as possible.
Exactly.
That's what's written on his notepad.
I also wonder who's going to be at the next debate, because as it gets smaller and smaller, he can't dodge questions. He can't not talk, because it gets smaller and smaller. The time stays there. You got to fill the air somehow.
And as we've seen with DeSantis, the more attention he gets, the worse he gets.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Honestly, yeah, maybe it was a good thing that for like 20 minutes he just wasn't on screen.
But that's not a strategy for him to win against someone like Donald Trump, who is the screen. You know what I'm saying?
Because, like, what? Asa Hutchinson, Doug Burgum, God, who else? Tim Scott, they probably don't make it to the next debate. Mm. That leaves us with, like, what? Christie, Haley, Vivek, Ron, and somebody else?
Pence.
Did you say Pence? Yeah. I don't think. Do you think Pence is making the next one?
He did good enough, I think, for expectations to maybe qualify for the next one. We'll have to see what the polling numbers
are. So maybe
like,
we have those five at the next one.
Yeah.
Gotta fill the airtime somehow with three people gone.
Yeah.
More attention has to be placed on him. And then as we move forward, he's gonna be a shoo-in to make it to all three debates. He's gonna be a shoo-in. He's not the front runner, but he's the front runner out of the people that are competing for second.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know.
Maybe you got to think, like, it's so sad that DeSantis is just like, don't fuck up and that's a win, right? and clearly that's what the donor class thinks as well, if they're kind of sending more money his way, because they've been a little nervous lately that DeSantis just isn't going to be able to do it because of all the media screw ups.
Yeah.
But I guess this debate was, I don't know, moralizing for them. was a good moment for the people who have wasted their money on this loser.
That's what I'm saying, because everyone is wasting their money.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Down the drain. Mm-hmm. They were barely able to siphon anything off of Trump's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Barely.
And they still don't have enough. Even all candidates combined don't have enough to beat Trump still. It's, I don't know. I think that brings us to the end of our analysis for this episode.
For sure. For sure.
For the people that could be considered our donor class.
Yes.
We got to give them a special thanks.
Oh, always.
They
every
keep the studio
time.
Lights on. They let us do fun stuff like live stream. You know,
exactly.
We wouldn't be doing this without these people.
No, 100%. They keep the lights on. They keep me happy. Keep my belly full.
Yeah. To the people that don't judge us when the episode is 4 hours late on Sunday. And like, I'm going to issue an apology. Like, I'm sorry, but we made it work.
I'm sorry. It was a tough morning.
Yeah. For reasons you don't need to understand or know about.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So special thanks to Nikki Nine Lives, Caden Kraut, Lord T the Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Kotz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Mattias T, Omar Suna, Rough Morning, like I said, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Dylan B, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Mayer, Maldonado, Hunter W, Fergalaki, Max Vezquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cuts, Gregory Isn't My Name, Veryuk, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfishin, Benneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Nietzsche, Big Booty Beatdown, Moises T, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Sines, Aaron and His Gundam Gundams, Darth Father, Aiden Taylor. See, that's why we switch off.
Yeah, Aiden Taylor, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, L.E.N., John Glover, WeeThief69, Devin Hatchett, Retro Mondo, Meatball Minion, Emma the Dude Slayer, Claire McMillan, Breezy B, Elijah Murray, Veronica, a.k.a. V, Raxon, Ash Smith, The Grotler, Magic Ian 95, Flower Clown, Jasperine Garris, Beetlebugs, Three Crows in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes and Hope of Giants, AK Gone, Aquana Dawn, Zach Lantian, Info Russell, Austin Greif, Marcus Corbett, Caleb Roper, Dustin Waldron, Taylor Rensock, Ishi Teddy, Cammy, Calliope, Reagan, Not Like the President, Pagan Jester, Tylen Freeman, Steak Daddy, Tay Tay, Isaac Hodges, Madeline C, Pab the Pab 69, Kayla Lowe, Anna Volinick, Eduardo Diaz, KCC, Say Yes to West, and My Mom. Thank you all so much for supporting the show on Patreon. If you just joined recently, maybe after seeing the live stream, and we missed the name, let us know. We'll get you on there for next
episode.
Harass
us, go for it.
Thank you to all of those that came out to watch the live stream, and keep an eye out for those mugshot t-shirts. They're coming very soon.
Please do.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a great week, everybody.